Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Legislation aimed at averting a nationwide rail strike is headed to President Biden.
The Senate passed a bill binding rail companies and workers to a proposed settlement reached in September. Some unions involved then rejected the deal, leading to a potential strike next week, which the Biden administration and business leaders warned could lead to massive job losses and pain around the holidays. The House voted yesterday to impose the agreement, and the bill now goes to President Biden, who hours earlier defended the settlement.
I negotiated a contract no one else could negotiate.
With pay raises, but not more paid leave. The president says he'll keep pushing to get that for rail workers and every other worker. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A state dinner at the White House tonight for French President Emmanuel Macron. Earlier in the Oval Office, President Biden said of Macron,
Emmanuel is not just the leader of France, he's one of the leaders of Europe. He's been very outspoken, and he has been very, very commanding.
The two vow to maintain a united front in support of Ukraine. Biden also signaled a willingness to address European concerns over U.S. climate legislation. A hurdle has been removed in the criminal investigation of President Trump's handling of top-secret information.
A three-judge panel of a federal appeals court based in Atlanta has ruled unanimously to end an independent review of the seized documents. The decision represents a significant win for federal prosecutors. It clears the way for them to use as part of their investigation the entire set of documents seized during an August 8th FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. The ruling also amounts to a sharp repudiation of arguments by Trump's lawyers. For months, they have said that the former president was entitled to have a so-called special master conduct a neutral review of the thousands of documents taken from the property. I'm Norman Hall.
This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It's 4 a.m., Monday, and you're literally sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. Man, that's love. And if you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. To make sure your child's in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A 10-year-old boy in Milwaukee is charged with homicide as an adult after admitting he killed his mother in November. He first told police it was an accident, but investigators did some more digging after relatives said they found his lack of remorse strange. Police say they found out he went online the next day and bought a virtual reality headset his mother wouldn't let him have. Senator Ron Johnson is calling for a vote to end the military's COVID-19 vaccination requirement. Several Republicans are warning they'll drag out Senate consideration of a massive annual military policy bill unless they get a vote. Johnson says the armed forces are discharging too many men and women because they don't want to get the shot. In sports, the Bucks beat the Knicks last night 109-103. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to start off right with the rail situation. While we are here in Georgia for the Georgia runoff between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker, who we now find out lives in Texas. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. We did know that. We knew he now knows he lives in Texas. We'll get to that later. But the rail situation all over everyone's mind, all over the news. And here's my frustration. I'm going to start right with the most frustrating part of all of this. I've been saying from the beginning, this is the rail companies. These are the rail barons doing this. Yet our corporate-controlled for-profit media, you're not hearing that. You know what could have averted any of this discussion at all of it? You know what could have averted any of the potential sky falling, any of the potential economic catastrophe? You know what could have ended that? The rail companies, in good faith, going to the bargaining table and saying we're going to hammer out an agreement that has dignity and respect for every working person. And that, yes, there are going to be sick days. But yet all we hear, all I've heard on the mainstream media, all I've heard on the F channels and the C channels, and all I've heard in our media, it's those unions. Those unions are holding the country hostage. Those unions are doing this. It's not the unions who are doing this. It's the rail barons who are doing this. It's these people who are making enormous, obscene amounts of profit. It's this. How come that's not the lead in the news? Rail barons made $23 billion last year. Deny workers any days off in a month. How come we don't hear that? How come we aren't hearing the working conditions of these workers? How come we're not hearing that? Why? Because it's easy to say, you know, these workers, these minority of the union members are holding all of us hostage. And what do they want? And this is the part where Democrats, listen up. This is where you can use this as something to bring people together. Because in every conversation I've been having over the last day, every one of them ends with, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they don't get health. I didn't know they don't get days off. They don't get sick days. Because in this day and age, people think that sick days are, well, everyone's got them, except the people who don't. This could be a moment where the legislation that should have passed yesterday, the legislation that should have been put together, would have been sick days for everybody. There shouldn't have been two separate bills, one to force the PEB contract down the throats of these workers, and then one to say, oh, well, we want to add 7 sick days. There should have been one bill, one. That one bill should have said, yep, we're going to amend the PEB's contract. We're going to amend that to give them the sick days that they asked for. And that's going to go forward. We're going to side with the workers for once. We're going to get them what they need. It's not a matter of what they want. You know, look, it's like the old Rolling Stones song. Sometimes you get what you need. But you don't always get what you want. This is that moment. They need time off with their families. They need time off to go to a doctor. They need time off to make plans for the day after tomorrow. They need this stuff. Want is something else. This should be the basis. And this is a moment where Democrats, and they still can. Look, the messaging is still here. These rail companies are so profitable, enormously profitable. And I would argue so much so that our inflation problems, you kind of got to wonder if they're making the kind of obscene profit that they're making. Again, you're paying that profit in every product that you buy that gets shipped on those rails. You're paying that profit. Those workers are paying that profit by not having sick days. Now you go, but Rick, you know, they got historic raises. They got all these wonderful things. Yeah, that should have been negotiated years ago. That 24% raise is retroactive to a couple of years ago because they've been negotiating this. And I shouldn't say negotiating. The rail companies have been stonewalling this entire time. Again, it comes back. Point the finger where it belongs. The finger belongs pointed at the CEOs, the rail barons of this era, the Jay Goulds of this century. That's where the finger, that's where the blame, that's where the... This is where it should be pointing. And this is where Democrats should be standing on the floor, standing on the steps of the Capitol, running in front of any microphone that would be stuck in their face and say, look, this could be averted. This could be all averted if these rail companies simply gave these workers what they need, which is a bit of security in knowing that all of us take this for granted. Anybody try and make a doctor appointment recently? Yeah, I had to make a doctor appointment, and they're going, well, you know, how about Tuesday in 3.5 months? How about making a dental checkup? Yeah, okay, 6 months. Pick a day in 6 months, and we'll give you that day. These guys can't do this. They don't have the ability to go, in 6 months, I know where I'm going to be. They don't. And by saying, no, you're going to have some time to ensure that you get off, and that this is a winning argument. When you explain the conditions that these people work under. Now, is it everyone in the rail industry? No. But the labor movement is about an injury to one being an injury to all. If you allow one worker to be harmed, if you allow one worker to be injured, if you allow one worker to be exploited, eventually it goes to everyone else. Which is why in this moment, labor people, union people like me are angry, frustrated, because I want a party. And this is where Republicans, maybe you can slide into this. Maybe Marco Rubio's onto something. Maybe Marco Rubio is going to be the champion of working people of the future. Maybe he is going to be the guy who goes, you know what? I'm going to put forth a piece of legislation to ensure all workers get sick days. Everyone has some dignity and respect in their workplace. Everybody has a chance to make a doctor appointment and get there. Everyone has the opportunity to take a day off to spend with a sick child or a spouse. Everybody has this opportunity. But as long as we say, no, see, we're going to force this contract down these handful of these workers' throats because everyone else is doing okay. Sorry, that ain't working. And good on the rail unions for going, you know what? If one union doesn't accept the contract, none of us accept it. I love how they're going, well, you know, it's only four of the unions that voted this down. The other eight wanted it. No. See, this is where solidarity matters. This is where understanding, you know, I stand with my brothers and sisters. This is where if they go on strike, you wouldn't see me crossing their picket lines. You'd see me turning my truck around and taking it back where I got it from. This is that moment. Another one of those moments that could bring working people together, could give us the opportunity to finally stand shoulder to shoulder. And what did they do? They neutered it. And they failed to move on the right messaging. Now, look, I look at Bernie Sanders as the guy who gets it. Sanders is going to push, and he's going to push. The fact that they came up with two bills is just insane to me. Now, I had a bunch of my Twitter influencer friends going, no, this is great. We're going to save the economy. We're going to get them the sick days. This is great. They passed two pieces of legislation. And I'm going, are you dumb or just stupid? Because you know what's going to happen. Both those bills are going to go to the Senate. There'll be some verbiage around both of them. One of them is going to pass. Which one do you think is going to pass? It's going to be the one with no sick days. It's going to be the one that imposes the contract and forces those workers to work under that contract until it's over. And then we end up doing this again down the road. The Marco Rubios of the world who are politically taking advantage of this moment going, no, I stand with the workers. Look at me, because it's a black eye on Biden. And this is a black eye on Biden. Now, here's the reality for all you Biden haters. Who keep sending me, see, I told you he was a bad guy. I told you he didn't like workers. I told you he was horrible. For all of you, he didn't have a choice in this. I truly don't believe that he had a choice in this. Because he's not going to allow the economy to come to a screeching halt. It would be political suicide. And I said this yesterday. This would be a murder-suicide pact if he did that. But you had to throw them a lifeline. You had to throw those sick. You had to do that. And they failed. And this half measure ain't cutting it. Now, there's still a chance, as I understand, Bernie Sanders is going to push for an amendment, which, good, we need that. And maybe they get one bill out of the Senate. Maybe, we'll see. It comes down to us, though. This is where we've got to be picking up the phone and calling our senators. We've got to be picking up the phone and demanding that they push to have this amended so that it is one bill. And that one bill gets passed and signed, including sick days. And then, Democrats, if you're listening, this is how you become the champion of working people. You say, we're going to put a floor under everyone's feet. We're going to ensure that everyone has access to paid time off. We're going to ensure that people have the ability to plan a doctor's appointment in 6 months when they need to get their teeth cleaned. That seems like common sense. Seems like a no-brainer. Seems simple if you're the party of the working class. So the messaging that's come out of this, and this is what's so frustrating to me, because, you know, even before the president came out and said this, I had people, you know, emailing me saying, you see, Rick, you know, Biden's going to side with the rail barons. The Democrats are just as bad as the Republicans. They're all in bed with the corporations. And how can you argue that they're not, given this moment? How can you argue that they're not? Now, look, gonna say it again. Big supporter of Joe Biden. Love the guy. Think he's done some really good things. I think the Democrats recently have done some really good things to help working families. The infrastructure bill, working on reshoring manufacturing, capping the insulin prices, all that stuff. All good stuff. This was a mistake. Now, I know, but Rick, you know, you said yourself this was never gonna go to a strike because of our laws. Congress was never going to not act. This was always going to be a political time bomb. This was always going to happen. Now, personally, if you're playing the game, I would have asked for a cooling off period to get onto the other side of the year. Put this in the lap of a Republican Speaker of the House. Let them put forth a piece of legislation. Because do you think, let me ask the other side of this, do you think Speaker McCarthy is going to move one piece of legislation that says we're going to ram this down their throat or amend it to take some of the raises and some of the things out of it that the rail barons are mad about and force that down the workers' throats? Do you think there's a second bill that says, hey, we're going to add sick days? Do you think a McCarthy speakership is going to bring that? Do you think the Republicans are going to do that? Of course not. They're not going to help the workers because they have always been the party that hates working people. But yet in this moment, in this brief little moment, this window, and Rubio being the opportunist that he is, he saw that window because he's been trying to weasel into that space for a while. Without voting for anything, without proposing anything. Look, I want Rubio to be a pro-worker senator. I want him to stand with working people. I want him to really do something to help workers' lives get better. But all this was about for Rubio This is an easy shot at unions. This is an easy shot at the Biden administration. That's what this is about. Because watch over the next couple of days. What does Rubio come out with policy-wise? Yeah, he's got some tweets. Yeah, he's going on the F channel. Yeah, he's out there saying I stand with the workers against those union bosses who, I don't know. Still trying to figure out how this is the union boss's fault. What this is the rail barons, the real bosses, the real people who are causing this situation. Our big railroads, our monopolistic railroads. You basically have a duopoly in this country. You've got two big railroads on the east, two big railroads on the west. That's about it. And those companies are wildly profitable. Why? Well, my conservative friends, this is where you should be telling me, well, there's not any competition. There's no competition. And here's my other question for my conservative friends. And this is where how do we bring people together around this moment? You're the ones who tell me all the time, believe in competition. Smaller, less intrusive stuff. Are you in favor of monopolies? Do you think having something so big, too big to fail, is a good thing? Do you think the fact that if the rail goes on strike, that the entire economy collapses? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think having a handful of railroads controlling that much of our economic output, do you think that's a good thing? Maybe the movement forward here, maybe we start breaking some of these up. Don't let them consolidate. There's a consolidation plan right now going on. Maybe we stop that and we start breaking up some of these big behemoths. Some of these people who have so much power that they can tell the government to go, you know, pound sand. You're not getting anything out of us. Big enough to, they don't care about the consequences. Understand, the robber barons of this era, they know what would have happened if a strike would have happened. Understand. And this is where my mind goes. Okay, let's say a strike happens. It goes a week and the shelves are empty. The highways are jammed. We can't get, the supply chains are broken again. The economy's tanking and everyone's going to blame those workers. It's the union's fault. The robber barons, they're going to sit back and laugh because you know what they know? They know prices are going to skyrocket. Inflation's going to go through the roof. They're going to line their pockets. They heads I win, tails you lose. That's what they know. And they know they play this game long enough, we'll turn on those workers. Because they've done it before. The quote that's always attributed to Jay Gould, I can easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. Can you imagine the ability to turn half of the working class against those railroad workers when things start to go south? How fast they would be able to do that? How fast they'd be able to tear things apart? And they're gleeful at doing it. Why? Because they know. They know. They're going to profit from it. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you get yours. You'll find ours from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Make sure you grab that. Also, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, again, I keep coming back to this because I think it's really important that we as a working class rise up around this. Now, look, I spent a good portion of today out talking to union members. You know, we're here in Georgia to get people out to vote, to get someone in the Senate who's going to support workers' rights. And one of the things I keep talking about is the PRO Act, the idea that workers should be able to join and form unions freely from the harassment of corporations. Undo the horrible effects of Taft-Hartley. Get rid of this nonsensical no rights at work, this right to work state nonsense, and give people the ability to join and form unions. And look, even here in Georgia, which has been a right to work state for a very long time, you've got people who are going, it's ridiculous that you have the kind of ability that these companies have to divide people in the workplace by hiring people who are not going to be part of the union simply to cause that division. And why? Well, so they don't have to pay better wages, hours, and conditions. I mean, this is the part that I find really, really curious. How it is we're so easily divided. How it is we're so easily pitted against each other. And my hope is, and I keep coming back to this idea that, you know, at a certain level, we've got to find this thing that brings us together. And I think this rail situation, this could be part of it. This could be it. I got another email. And again, if you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. G sent me this email that says, quote, Buttigieg could implement existing regulations citing safety. The union can observe all safety standards, inspect rail, all rolling stock, adhere to every existing rule and regulation, cite national security risk posed by hazardous tanker trains pulling through inhibited areas, urban and suburban populations, a slowdown strike effectively. The Cisco strike in New England was instructive. Secondary support by affiliated unions brought Cisco hat in hand to the bargaining table. 2,000 truck trailers filling streets would really send a message, saving pessimism for better times. Look, you know, this is why, again, I go back to the Taft-Hartley. They boycotted they made it illegal for secondary strikes and boycotts. The wealth class knows what they're doing. They know how to stop the movement of we, the working people, the ability of us to come together and support one another. And this is where, again, there's part of me, and I'm not advocating for this, by the way, just so my union friends know, but there's part of me that goes, at some point, working people have to go, you know what? The laws be damned. The rail barons don't follow the rules. They write them. Maybe it's time we, the people, step forward. Maybe it's time for we, the people, to demand. And not just for rail workers, but for all workers. I mean, the reality is these trains are getting so big. And look, we've talked to leaders of different unions that represent rail workers, and they keep telling us the same story over the last couple of years, the last decade, the last two decades. We've seen the consolidation from something like 40 railroads now down to, what, 7? Thousands of workers sent to the curb. And of course, the work still has to get done. The train's getting longer and bigger and heavier. What does that mean for you and me, the public? And look, you could follow every safety regulation, and I want them to. Not for what this email is suggesting, that we have a slowdown strike, but because it's the right thing to do. Follow safety concerns. I don't want bomb trains rolling down the tracks any more than anyone else does. But this is one of those moments. One of those moments where hopefully we wake up. And hopefully we say enough is enough already. That is my hope. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. This is, I'll tell you, it's angering, frustrating. So much here. But email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I want to hear your thoughts. I'm going to take a quick break.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at WAUKradio.com.
Capitol Riot. I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. The chairman of the House committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol says the panel's interviewed its last witness and is moving on to its final report. Meanwhile, Norman Hall reports a hurdle has been removed in the criminal investigation of President Trump's handling of top secret information the FBI found at his Florida estate.
A three-judge panel of a federal appeals court based in Atlanta has ruled unanimously to end an independent review of the seized documents. The decision represents a significant win for federal prosecutors. It clears the way for them to use as part of their investigation the entire set of documents seized during an August 8 FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. The ruling also amounts to a sharp repudiation of arguments by Trump's lawyers. For months, they have said that the former president was entitled to have a so-called special master conduct a neutral review of the thousands of documents taken from the property. I'm Norman Hall.
And I'm Ben Thomas.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. The Wisconsin Election Commission has agreed to postpone a massive data request for statewide voter registration lists, including contact information, until it's decided who will be the Republican chair of the Assembly Elections Committee this month. The current chair, Representative Janelle Branchon, initially requested 20 years of data in January. This is a limited version of that request. The WEC estimates it will cost over $49,000 and take close to 2 weeks to fulfill that request. Should expel from the closed GOP caucus in November after her colleagues said they couldn't trust her. It's unlikely that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss will reappoint her as committee chair. The information will likely still be of interest. A Marquette poll showed that 60% of Republicans surveyed are either not too confident or not confident at all in the results of the 2020 election. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Door to door to get proof of fraudulent voting. What could possibly go wrong with that?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So welcome back to Georgia as we continue our time here as covering the Walker-Warnoff. I get stuck on both of those because they're so close. But the reality is, as people, they're so far, they're diametrically opposed, polar opposites. But you know how many times I've screwed that up in the days where I've said Walker instead of Warnock or Warnock instead of Walker. I mean, it's don't know if it's a brain thing or what, but they just sound similar. And I'm hoping when people go to the polls, well, I'm hoping that that they remember, you know, Herschel Walker lives in Texas, according to him. And I guess occasionally goes down to the border, according to him. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, this Walker Warnock race. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com is the website. My favorite reporter over there. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem. I've been to on the border, but that's all I got.
I've been to south of the border in South Carolina. Does that matter?
Right?
No, but you know, Walker comes out and says, I live in Texas. Shouldn't that be disqualifier right there?
Technically, it is a disqualifier. I think you could probably take him to court if he is elected, because he declared a homestead exemption in the state of Texas. It wasn't just that he has said, oh, yeah, I live in Texas. No, he actually declares that he lives in Texas. And if he, I think his property that he had in Georgia was a rental property. Yeah. So I just, there's not, that's, it's not going to work out very well. So, and under Georgia law, like, that's, you can't do that. That's not how that works.
But the weird thing,
this works.
The weird thing to me is he's just so he's not even qualified, I don't know, to walk by the Senate, let alone be in it.
Yeah. And the thing is that, I don't know how many people have seen the latest ad that Warnock has out, where it just has people watching videos of Herschel Walker saying crazy stuff. It is the most hilarious video I've ever seen, because like, you feel exactly the same way that these people feel. My favorite one is whenever Walker was making that stupid comment about the air in China and they steal our air and something. And there's like this guy who's just like doing the, you know, WTF motion with his hand. And he's like, it's all the same air. I was like, man, I'd wear a t-shirt with that on it. That's hilarious.
It reminds me, I compare what's going on right now to the movie Idiocracy. Have you ever seen that?
No, sorry.
It's well worth the watch. I mean, because there's a line in there where the main character, the really smart guy, goes, maybe you should put water on the crops so the crops will grow. And the one guy goes, water? You mean like in the toilet? Just that kind of moment that we're living the insanity, we're living the ridiculousness of what was just a bad movie from the 90s. Scary.
There was a candidate in Oklahoma that was running for school board a couple of years ago, and it was an actual, like, the Democratic candidate was a former teacher, had been a school board member, and was then running for state board of superintendent of public instruction is what they call it in Oklahoma. And this other woman that was running against her was a dentist who had invested in a bunch of charter schools. And so there's this debate. And the Democrat just like turns to the Republican at one point and goes, you're a dentist. She's a dentist. And I think the state really felt that. And I kind of feel like that is the same thing here, where, you know, you don't want to disparage the guy too much, but you're kind of like, he's been hit in the head 700 times.
No, 700. I'd say 7,000, 70,000.
Right. Like, it's. Dude, no, bad idea. Would you trust him to, you know,
not even mow my lawn?
Sit your dog.
Not even mow my lawn.
Right? Like, that's the thing, is I would not trust him to dog sit.
And I've been trying to kill my lawn.
Salt.
Because I hate mowing it that much. No, but this is just one of those moments, and I'm hoping that, you know, and to be honest, you know, some of the folks that we've talked to here, now, there's no changing hearts and minds at this moment. This is just about getting people to the polls and getting over the obstacles that Republicans have put in place. And they have, with this SB 202, have put numerous obstacles, shortened the amount of time for the runoff, closed down drop boxes, all kinds of stuff to limit people's access to the polls. But you feel the sense that people are going to, you know, walk through fire because of this. So I'm going to be interested to see how on the other side of this, when we look back at it, how effective the vote theft scheme was by Brian Kemp and the Republicans here with SB 202.
I think what's interesting about Georgia is that Democrats have gone through so many rounds of education about, you know, how to vote, how to register, how to re-register, again and again and again. And then, you know, early voting and all the lawsuits and everything. I feel like they Democrats have been so educated, thanks to Stacey Abrams, about this stuff that they kind of get it. Whereas a lot of these rules, Republicans have not really had to pay attention much to before, because they just, you know, they get to show up on election day and vote. And so I wonder the extent to which those voters are not prepared for some of these elections. Yeah. And if it turns out, I mean, because they don't vote early, if it turns out like, oh, I don't have time today to do it, then it's not a big stretch for them. Like the Republicans in Georgia, if you win that Senate race, it's not going to change the sway of the Senate for them. So yeah, there's no real incentive for Republicans to go out and vote. And there is for Democrats, because it's Reverend Warnock. I mean, he's a cool guy. He's a really smart, sweet dude.
Marxist. So I had someone, I wanted to say spell Marxism, but I didn't. Because, you know, look, but this is a working class person who's struggling at a, you know, working class job, admitted, you know, not making the wages that he needs to keep up. But yet, you know, the message that he's got in his head is, Warnock, Marxist. I go, that's it? Where'd you hear?
Well, I think they figured out that trying to claim that he wasn't a real Christian, I think that one was a huge flop. Because for a while, I feel like the whole first part of this election was Walker attacking his Christianity. And it's like, do you know what he does for a living? Do you know what he's dedicated his entire life to?
But isn't that the Republican plan? Isn't that the what Republicans do? They attack your strength and belittle your strength to the point where people start questioning your strengths. I mean, this is classic Republican campaign tactics.
I think to some extent there is that, but it seems like, you know, dating back 30, 40 years now, Republicans have always attacked a Democrat's faith. And so I wonder the extent to which Walker just thought, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do.
No, stop.
Because he's not smart enough.
No, stop.
To have a strategy.
Stop. The last sentence, no, Walker thought, no.
Ah, right. But I can see him making a really stupid, like, oh, this is what other people do, so I'm going to do this. And it's just not like, no, you have to actually legitimately think about who you're running against.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people get out, and I'm hoping that everyone gets out regardless, and that this is a true election, that we're, the will of the people is done, and I'm hoping they vote for Raphael Warnock. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. Make sure you check out the amazing work she does there. Let's move along. Oath Keeper, guilty. Well, both of them guilty. Seditious conspiracy.
Yeah, so they were all guilty on a couple of different charges, and then on sedition, there were two of them that were guilty and three of them that were not. The interesting thing is we chatted with a couple of the January 6th committee members this week about their thoughts. Jeannie Raskin is just like this brilliant lawyer mind. And the way that he talked about it is, he was like, you know, it feels like it is the, you can tell in this case, the jury understood what was happening here, because they were able to distinguish between, you know, somebody who they think committed a seditious conspiracy versus someone who did not. It would be very easy for them to just be like, screw it, go in there, throw everybody in jail for sedition. But the fact that they broke it up, I think, will make it a little bit more difficult for them on an appeal. And so I hadn't really thought of that way. And that makes a lot of sense to me, the way that he explained it. So, you know, it's, this hopefully will motivate the Proud Boys whenever it comes to what they're talking to the prosecutors about, if they'll make a deal or not based on, oh, crap, I could actually go to prison for 20 years.
Yeah, no. And again, this is what I've been saying all along. These are the sentences I hope they get are the kind that should have been coming out a while ago to force people into going, no, I better cut a deal.
Yeah,
because what I did could get me locked up for a long time. And because I think we need to get to the bottom of what happened on January 6th. I keep saying I want to know who funded it. I want to know where the money came from. I want that. And I'm hoping the January 6th commission, I'm hoping they publish that.
I think so, too. I'm hoping that the piece of it that I think will link to a higher person is, who were people like Stuart Rhodes and what's his name? The Proud Boys guy who were they talking to and coordinating with that was also working with the White House? Was it Mark Meadows or was it Roger Stone who was working with Mark Meadows? So like figuring out where those links are, I think will get us to the White House. And that's going to be, you know, the big piece of this.
Ultimately, do you think it goes all the way up to the White House? Do you think Trump was involved
in this? Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we heard was there was a, I think it was from the January 6th committee, was a staffer, a lower level staffer who was asked to go buy a whole bunch of burner phones, went to CVS, paid cash for the burner phones, but entered his CVS phone number so that he could get the deal, you know, the coupons that you get. So the charge was then recorded. So all of these burner phones that this person purchased, then you have to ask, okay, well, who were these burner phones given to and what phone, you know, who were they calling? So we know that there was some kind of sketchy phone calls that were happening. So if these were the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and the Women for America First people who organized all of this and helped pay money for it, and if they were going all the way up to Mark Meadows, I think that is the important piece, because once you get Mark Meadows, then he's like, I'm out. Like, he's going to sing.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the thing is, I keep wondering why Trump keeps going further and further to the extreme. I mean, this dinner he had with the white supremacist, what are you thinking? And what do they have on him? Or why?
It would not surprise me if Trump didn't actually know enough about Nick Fuentes to understand exactly who he was. He probably just thought, oh, he's a white supremacist, not necessarily a Nazi. He did not see that coming.
There's a difference. There's a difference between, you know,
surprisingly,
degrees.
Surprisingly, so
you could be a good white Nazi.
Right. What Nick Fuentes, what was interesting is that he's definitely a Nazi, but he is more of a chauvinist. He pushes more chauvinist white supremacist language lately than he does Nazi stuff, which I feel like was very early, 2015.
In his development, early in the development was just, okay, I got it.
So it's entirely possible that Trump was like, who is Nick Fuentes? And then it showed a couple of videos where he's like, oh, he's just a white supremacist. I'm cool with that. You know, it's just but the thing is Kanye West is a Nazi. He legit is. He has told people that he works with that he's fascinated by Hitler. He wanted to mention him in an album. Like, this is, he is, you know, so it's like, if you're going to meet with Kanye and you haven't been watching the news for the last year, then you have definitely missed something that's going on.
Yeah. You're
meeting with him. Even if he's bringing his Nazi buddy to brunch, like, it's just not the smartest thing to do. But, you know, Trump likes anybody who likes him. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah. No, well, it's interesting. What has been interesting is there have been a couple of Republicans who have come out and say, well, this probably wasn't a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So the fun thing that we've talked to a bunch of members. Like, the members went to the Thanksgiving. They came back this week. And so we've just been chasing down members being like, so what do you think about, you know, Trump having brunch with the Nazis? And so it's been interesting to see those people who are just like, you know, oh, well, I wouldn't have done that. Or, you know, like, really sort of passive responses. John Cornyn, we had to chase John Cornyn for 3 days to get an answer out of him. His first statement was, I've got better things to do than to sit here and, you know, denounce somebody for you know, having a meal with a Nazi or something like that. And it's like, really, how long would it take you to be like, you know what, Nazis are bad? Like, really, how long does that take? Yeah. John Cornyn. Day two, he ducked into an elevator. We're like asking him, you know, where, and he's just like, see you later. And then so my colleague chased after him and was like, is that no comment, sir? Elevator doors close. And so day three, finally, we tracked him down and got an answer from him. And he was like, well, you know, I'm not anti-Semitic. It's like, oh, thanks. Because we were really curious, like, where are you on the Jews? Right? Like, what? We've gotten to the point where that's what we have to ask Republicans now is, are you good with the Jews? Or do you want to, like, what? Where are you on this? And that's how sad it has become in Washington.
Wow.
It's desperate. You got to pull somebody's teeth out just to get them to be like, yeah, no, Nazis bad.
Yeah, Nazis are bad. But you know, even Lindsey Graham wasn't. Well, what did he say? It was a bad day for Trump. I mean,
yeah, he was like, any day that you're. So we started out with like, any day that you're talking about Nazis and white supremacists instead of the economy or Joe Biden is a bad day for Trump. And it was like, you think? Like, do you really think that the strategy now for Donald Trump is just to be like, you know, when you're asked, hey, tell me, do you believe in Nazis, for him to just be like, let me talk to you about inflation. Like, no, that's not going to work well. Like, that's the one where people are going to be like, no, seriously, where are you on the Jews? Right. People want to know.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And, you know, if it was a bad day for Trump to have dinner with a white supremacist or a Nazi, you know, how bad is it that he admitted that he stole the documents that he had in Mar-a-Lago? I mean, and this is where, you know, I was talking to a MAGA cat wearing Gosh, they made that up. The FBI done planted that. I'm going, no, he admitted it.
He admitted it on Truth Social. That was the craziest night ever. I was almost done with work for the night. And I just like, you know, clicked over to look at Trump's True Social just to double check he wasn't having a meltdown. And then sure enough, he was having a meltdown and was like saying the weirdest thing about, you know, everybody else has done this, and which they haven't. And at least I was transparent about it. And it was just like, dude, you just admitted to it. Like, do you not see, like, don't you know his lawyers are just banging their heads on the desk right now?
No, but wasn't that his argument, though, that he had the power? He declassified everything, so
right.
He had the power to take it. So, of course, there's part of me that goes, of course, in his mind, yeah, he could admit it. Yeah, I did it. So what? I made it legal. It's okay, because I said so. I mean, right. that's the only defense.
Yeah, that's the only option that he's got, because the first thing he tried was, you know, well, somebody, you know, this, they planted this. And then the second one was, well, I didn't know that they had packed all this stuff up, which there is documentation that shows that they asked the White House, you shouldn't be packing this stuff up, so you're going to have to sign off on it. And the White House signed off on it. There is a document trail that goes back to this that is so so pronounced, and that the DOJ has in their hands right now. So there's no way that he wins on this. And what I've heard from people who are talking to prosecutors in the Justice Department is like they're expecting an indictment within the next 90 days. So, yay.
That cannot come fast enough.
Right?
And finally, I want to get your thoughts on the Twitters. I know everyone's looking for the bail, where we're going to go. Some are going to Hive, Mastodon. Mm-hmm. There's just so many now. But Musk has now, I guess, starting to suspend accounts and ban people. Dean Baker, who's been on this show a number of times, evidently got his account suspended. Andrew Lawrence from Media Matters, I guess his account suspended. What happened to the champion of free speech? What happened to that?
Yeah, that's what's been interesting about that, is that he's only for free speech if people are saying what he wants them to say. And that's not what free speech is. My favorite thing has been the fake people that are coming out who are getting verified, like the guy who came out as Jesus, you know, who was verified. That was amazing. And his bio says, like, you know, carpenter, healer.
Stealer.
Those have been fun. Like, that's the only real reason that I stick around, is just kind of to see the implosion. Yeah. And also to see the fake accounts.
I'm not leaving.
I mean, I that's the other thing, too, is there was a conversation, oddly enough, on The View with Alyssa Milano, where she made a really good point. Like, we can't cede that land to people like Elon Musk and the Nazis. Like, you can't let them have that. You shouldn't let them have that. I get why people are leaving. Like, it is sort of this mental health issue where you can only take it so long for, like, Nazis to yell at you, right?
And that's where you yell back. That's where you yell back.
Or just mute them. I mean, that's the worst thing. Oh, don't block them.
Can't do that.
But if you mute them, then they're forced to see your stuff, and you don't have to see any of theirs.
No. You got to take on Nazis. You cannot cede ground to Nazis. And I'm not leaving. Elon Musk is going to have to suspend and ban me, just like Dean Baker and Andrew Lawrence and the rest of the ones, because he's thin-skinned, and this whole idea, this nonsense that he's a free speech, get out of here with that nonsense.
Yeah, that's crap. That's such crap.
Complete nonsense.
I don't know Yeah, I don't know how you fight back against that if he's just making stuff up about it. You got to figure out, like, you can't have terms of services who are like, if you do something I don't like, then you're gone.
Sure you can. Sure you can. It's a private company.
Yeah, I guess he can, but yeah. Then you're just...
And that's
there
where
really
this...
is... There's no way he's going to make any money off of this. I mean, all of the
I don't know. I think he can fleece people for, you know, $20 for the blue check. I think he can make a little bit. But I think long term, he's going to end up screwing himself. I think that's possible. But, you know, I personally think this is more about just ticking off the left and you know, making lib tears and all this. And I'm going, look, this is why you don't give power to rich people to be kings and dictators. He's showing us why.
Yeah. That's exactly what there he's doing. And that's, I think, you know, there's,
tax him.
He's going to lose his money on it. That's what's been so great is it's just like, you know, I get that you were able to get investors and stuff, but he cashed in $4 billion of his Tesla stock to buy this thing.
Yeah, but he's not going to be on the street corner selling pencils anytime soon.
No, but he's certainly not going to be the richest man in the world anymore.
And I'm okay with that. And this is why we need to start taxing people like him and using that money to help the homeless and the hungry and get education and healthcare for people. That's where we need to go. But Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out the work that she does. Rawstory.com is the website. Make sure you check that out. We'll get links out on social media how you can do it. Going to take a quick break. Remember, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorites, you'll find ours from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1955. That was the day that Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. With that action, she helped to launch the civil rights movement in the United States. Rosa Parks is often portrayed as simply a weary woman, tired from a long day of work as a seamstress. While that was true, she was also a member of the NAACP, who had been trained in race relations at the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee. Her refusal to give up her seat was a political act. When she was arrested, E.D. Nixon looked into what happened. Nixon was a leader of his union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. He called the police department to inquire about Parks, only to be told it was none of your damn business. He found a lawyer and posted her bail. Leaders in the black community decided to declare a bus boycott for the following Monday. They called themselves the Montgomery Improvement Association. The first day of the boycott was a rounding success, but many wanted to end the action. At a meeting of the Montgomery Improvement Association, Nixon gave an impassioned speech where he said, "What's the matter with you people? We have been living off the sweat of these washermen all of these years, and you have never done anything for them. Now you can have a chance to pay them back. And you're too damn scared to stand on your feet and be counted." They decided to continue the boycott. In order to keep it going, organizers established a private taxi service to ensure that black residents could get to and from work. For more than a year, they kept up the boycott until they won their fight for desegregation. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So real quick, you know, here in Georgia, I got to tell you, I've been having a fabulous time talking to people. And this is one of those things. If you remember the tour we did, the Working Class Heroes radio tour back in October up until the last election, the frame that I kept coming up with is, look, people want that thing that's going to pull them back together. And manufacturing is a huge part of that. Had so many conversations with people who go, you know, I remember this community, the used to be's that we talked about on the tour, that so many people today are going, hey, you know, why can't we rebuild that? Now, I've spent a lot of time today beating up on Joe Biden over this thing, and he needs it. But, you know, the fact that we're still talking about reshoring manufacturing, there's some stuff we should be really working on. And that's something that keeps coming up, keeps popping up, the idea that that can...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.